Good morning. Dan Gibbons for U.S. Bank. 2 minutes, please. Acceleration of a debt occurs. The test is clear and unequivocal affirmative action. That's what is necessary. There is no self-executing acceleration. There is no reasonable inference of acceleration. There is no constructive acceleration. There must be an affirmative act that is clear and unequivocal. There was none here.
Was the July 2008 letter from Recon Trust an affirmative action?
No, that was I believe you're referring to the FDCPA debt verification letter. It's CP-415, I believe.
The one that says that $992,000 is due?
That is a statutorily required letter that's required by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. 15 U.S.C. 1692 GA1 requires the amount of the debt to be included in that notice. So that's why the $992,000 amount is there.
So here's the question, and it's based on the timing. So you get the initial letter in April. Default is May. This letter of July 9 is sent 2 months mm-hmm. later. Is it a factual question what your client's motivation was for sending that letter? Your client avers it was required by another statute. Opposing party avers that it was the follow-up to the will be accelerated letter.
Well,
isn't that a factual question? What your intent was?
My answer to that would be that's not part of the test.
Sure, it's
an unequivocal test. Is.
Sure, it is.
What
sure
either
is.
Side's intention
don't,
or belief
don't talk
was.
Yourself out of it. You're in a pretty good position, but don't talk yourself out of it.
All right.
I think based on evidence.
My client's
is decided on summary judgment when there's no dispute as to the evidence or the inferences that can be drawn.
Okay. And my client, I think where you find my client's intention is in the notice of default, the notice of trustee sale, three of them, and all the other documents that show we're not asking for $992,000. You can cure by paying far less than that. That's where their intention
well,
is.
Well, that certainly supports your argument, but doesn't it support it in terms of its factual probity?
Well, I haven't thought of it in that manner. I've thought of this test
well,
in a very
clear
high level.
You've got about 5 minutes and 9 seconds to tell me why that wouldn't be so. Seems to me it's so.
Did they intend to accelerate?
Is sending a letter 2 months after you've threatened to accelerate the debt? So you've threatened to accelerate the debt in May. You send a letter in July that says you know owe us $992,000.
They always owed the $992,000. That wasn't new. That's the balance that's just being reported. That's
I understand that, but you send them a letter that says you owe us $992,000. One inference is that you're doing it for the reason you state. Another inference is it's not a coincidence that this came 2 months after they threatened.
This is a manifestation
of that intent.
There must be an acceleration. There must be a clear and unequivocal affirmative act. So let's look at that.
Demanding the entire amount.
Doesn't demand the entire amount. It says this is the balance.
Wasn't the entire amount $992,000?
Yes, but there's nothing in there that says you must pay $992,000 immediately to cure. There's nothing in there that says we have accelerated and you owe $992,000. The contents are required by statute.
The case went to trial. Nobody brought any pretrial motion. The case went to trial. That this letter would be inadmissible.
I would file a motion in limine to exclude it because it's more prejudicial and
perfect.
What
should the judge rule on your motion? There was no motion.
It's not relevant to the issue of acceleration, and I would just invite you to look at it. You know, what's being done to make a colorable claim of acceleration is we're piecing together different documents. Which this July letter, let's just, you know, the trustee.
I've written cases that militate in your favor, but none of them have said that we don't that we don't resort to actual facts and piece together and look at what happened to see if it supports the meaning that
but
that
they do say that there must be a clear and unequivocal affirmative act to accelerate.
That's the standard, right? That's not an evidentiary limitation on proffered evidence.
I'm not saying there has to be.
It comes in, if there's a question of fact, once it comes in, does it meet that standard?
It would not meet the issue of being a genuine issue of material fact in this case because, as I said, that document never says it's been accelerated. It's a statutorily required letter, and the contents of that letter are also required by statute. A1 of that statute says you must inform the borrower of what the balance is, of what the amount owed is, and you have to include everything in there about you have 30 days to dispute you're going to pay this, and if not, then we're going to assume that you don't dispute it, and this is, we're going to go forward assuming that you agree with us, that that's the amount due and all of that.
Is this the letter at CP 418 that you're talking about?
418. 415 is the letter with the $992,000 amount in it. 418, I believe, is the notice of default. That also, they probably came in the same envelope. They probably did from the trustee. And I need to point out, Your Honor, that strictly speaking, it didn't come from Countrywide. It came from Recon Trust, who was the trustee. Now, in the great scheme of things, Recon Trust is a subsidiary of Bank of America, and so is Countrywide. That's true. But overall, the only thing I'm asking you to do here is to follow the cases that you have already decided. Mercuri, Erickson, Edmondson, Karen L. Gibbon. Those cases are all show that we have you've rejected this will be accelerated.
I'm more familiar with Mercuri than Erickson than either of the others, than any of the others. Are you of the opinion that in Erickson or Mercuri, either of them had anything like this letter that said you owe the entire amount?
I don't know that there was. I didn't look at the clerk's papers in those cases. I just looked at the opinion. What I can say
is that— I assume I didn't miss anything.
What I would say is that the Recon Trust, who was the trustee that acted for all of the Bank of America entities, they're following a checklist. They're going to put that letter out too. And honestly, this letter is the impact and the import is being mischaracterized. This is not intent to accelerate. This is compliance with a statute that says you must send this letter, and if you don't, well, then you have an FDCPA claim on your hands.
Do the facts relating to Mr. Tikal have any relevance to our analysis?
I think they impact tolling. If we get there, I have to point out that at trial or at summary judgment, the amount was not in dispute. That was never disputed by the Stantons.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michelle McNeil, appearing on behalf of the respondents, Denise and Jack Stanton. The key issue, I think, in this case is this July 9th legal notice. If you look at the prior cases, I mean, obviously I've argued that I think the April letter in and of itself should have accelerated, but the case law that we now has occurred since this case started, really the courts are now, I think, looking for something beyond this April notice of intent to accelerate. And if you look at Mercuri and if you look at Erickson, they didn't have that. Erickson had a repayment plan, you know, so obviously there was an agreement entered into, which the April letter, the notice of acceleration, talks about, that you have until this date to either pay this amount or enter into an agreement. So, and then there's also case law that talks about, you know, how you rescind an acceleration, and certainly entering, one way to do it is to pay the arrears and reinstate your loan. Another one is to enter into an agreement, which is what happened in Erickson. It basically sort of restarts everything.
At CP 418, the notice of default says that the Stantons can cure the payment defaults by paying $28,000 and some. Is that correct?
You have to speak a little louder.
The notice of
hearing,
default,
sorry,
at CP 418 says that the Stantons can cure by paying about $28,000.
Correct.
Within 30 days. And you're saying that that's not necessarily inconsistent with acceleration.
No. And the reason not is one of the things I keep coming back to is why do we have this legal notice? The Deed of Trust Act doesn't require it. They say, look, you either pay this or we're going to do this X, Y, and Z. We're going to accelerate and then we're going to foreclose. The notice of default came on the same day as a legal notice. That is all that the Deed of Trust Act required. Clearly, they intended to do a non-judicial foreclosure because why? August comes the notice of trustee sale. The legal notice, there's no reason for that other than acceleration. My clients didn't owe the full balance of the debt. It's an installment contract. If there's no acceleration, they only owed the arrears, which is in the notice of default. And the contract, the Deed of Trust, and the Deed of Trust Act allow a borrower to pay the arrears, and in the Deed of Trust contract it actually says, as if no acceleration had occurred. So my clients always had that right to bring, to pay all of those arrears and reinstate their loan, even though the loan had been accelerated.
How about the 2013 letter from NationStar that seems to indicate that there hasn't been acceleration?
The problem I have with that letter is it wasn't submitted at either motion for summary judgment hearing. It didn't appear in the first one, and it didn't appear at the second one. If you look at the order granting the Stantons motion for summary judgment, it lists all the documents that the court considered, and that letter is not one of them. It was only presented for a motion for reconsideration that got denied. It's also attached to an attorney's declaration, not the client, so it lacks proper foundation. There's no proof of that it actually got mailed. There's no proof my client actually received it. So, you know, if we talk about some affirmative action or, you know, clear indication that you accelerated, I think the same has to apply for deacceleration. If you're going to reverse an acceleration, then I think it has to be clearly brought home to the borrower that that's what you're doing. Well, and there's nothing in the record that shows my client
really,
ever got it.
I don't know that the issue is really deacceleration or whatever other word we want to create to describe the situation. I think the issue is, what are the facts, and does something later support that acceleration happened earlier?
Yes.
I mean it's a surrounding circumstance type of it's not that something happened and now it's being taken back. It's whether or not it supports that it ever happened at all. So my question is, are you arguing that you were right to win and there's no question of fact here? Or are you arguing that there are, after reading these other cases, that there are questions of fact here?
There isn't a material fact in dispute. One of the things that was raised, it may have been at the first motion for summary judgment hearing, was how do we know when it accelerated? Right. So if it didn't accelerate on May 17th, which is the day after the deadline in the notice of acceleration, did it accelerate on that date, like we initially argued before all these cases came down, or did it accelerate on July 9th with this legal notice to collect a debt of the full amount? It's not material. We could say that it accelerated on July 9th. And with all the possible tolling periods in the favor of the plaintiff, the statute of limitations still expired. And that's what I argued with the trial
court.
That's
a question that only matters to the statute of limitation argument. It doesn't matter to the acceleration argument.
Well,
whether it accelerated, you don't have to show on what day it accelerated. You just have to show
I don't think you have to show an exact date.
To win on a limitation period argument, you have to have a date, a starting date to count from.
We have to be able to count from some date. And in this case, we can count it from July 9th, and it's still they've commenced an action too late. As far as deciding whether an acceleration occurred, I think you have to look at all the facts. You have to look at this letter that they were sent, you know, that they had previously done everything possible to cure because they're being threatened with acceleration. And everything that it said it was going to happen after acceleration happened here. They get a legal notice that's telling them that the full amount is due. And, oh, by the way, if you pay this amount, you might have to pay a little more because of some added interest. And then they get a notice of default and we go into foreclosure.
If the 2013 letter from NationStar is admissible, does it create a material issue of fact?
I think if the 2013 letter is admissible, then I think it does raise a factual issue as to whether or not NationStar intended to rescind the acceleration, because I think they didn't even know it had accelerated. So, yeah, I think that would be an issue of fact as to what was intended by that letter. Were they just simply asking for arrears? Because remember, what's in that letter is the arrears.
And would that issue of fact preclude summary judgment?
The issue of fact, if that letter was admissible and it showed a potential intent to revoke a prior acceleration, I believe that that would be a material fact that would defeat summary judgment, yes. Simply from the standpoint of if the acceleration is revoked, and there's really no case law right now in our state on revocation, but if acceleration is revoked, if it did get revoked in 2013, then the clock would have started over. And I believe even with all the tolling periods, it was December 2015 when the statute lapsed. So in answer to your question, I can't think of any other way other than to say, yeah, I would raise a material fact. But again, it wasn't presented in either motion for summary judgment hearing. It wasn't in the court's order. I believe RAP 9.12 doesn't allow this court to even consider it. So, and certainly if it had been raised, we would have mounted lots of objections simply from the standpoint it lacks the proper foundation, and there's no evidence. Even the Deed of Trust Act requires proof of service. There's no proof of mailing, and there's no proof of service.
And there was no response filed to the motion for reconsideration?
There was a response, but it's not required. Most motions for reconsideration, the judge just considers them and then rules. But when we got to the motion for summary judgment, the second one, it was never raised. It wasn't presented as in support of their opposition, so it was never discussed in that hearing. And my client wasn't given a chance at that hearing to deal with that issue at all.
If this case is remanded for a factual determination, a trial.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the effect of that on the ruling on the motion to amend?
The effect of the 2013 letter?
The effect of the remand.
If you remanded for a factual determination about what?
We say there's a question of fact about whether there was ever acceleration. Go back for trial.
Okay.
There was a motion to amend that was denied in part because trial was approaching.
Mm-hmm.
Now trial would not be approaching. It would be in the offing.
Right.
You'd be getting a date. Is there anything about the nature of the motion to amend that would preclude that same motion from being brought on remand, given the facts would be different? I'll let you answer.
You mean the motion for reconsideration?
No, there was a motion to amend.
Oh, the motion to amend. Obviously if it's remanded, they could do the motion to amend. But again, I argue that it still wouldn't change anything.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You need to recall that on the bank summary judgment motion, that wasn't just denied. The trial court determined that the statute of limitations had run, as argued by the defense, and awarded the defense attorney's fees and costs without there even being a dispositive motion on file. The trial court determined that the Stantons won the case. So the issues about, well, this wasn't argued later on the quiet title summary judgment, well, the court had already erred at that point so severely that the case was over with. The court had determined the case was done, and the Stantons had won. That has to be pointed out here.
Well, I don't know why it has to be. You did.
It hasn't been mentioned.
You did. But the reason it came up is because opposing counsel was saying this was never in the record.
Well, it was in there.
You seem to be arguing that the later proceeding was of no significance. So if you put it in a motion for reconsideration of the later proceeding, somehow we should pay more attention to it rather than less?
There was sufficient just the declarations were already on file. If the argument is that the declaration on the motion for reconsideration has an improper foundation, so be it. There's still plenty of evidence that was already on file in the previous summary judgment proceeding to say there's all kinds of genuine issues of material fact on acceleration if we're just looking at the quiet title issue. I'd submit to you that the court erred in denying U.S. Bank's motion for summary judgment because there was no acceleration. Under Mursuri, under Karen L. Gibbon, under all the cases we've talked about, there was no acceleration. And they have not disputed whether or not there was a default. They have not disputed the amount. They have only argued just the one argument. There was an acceleration, and now we're more than 6 years out, past the tolling and all that. That's the only defense they have. Thank you.
Thank you.